From where Frank and Salty were now, they could see the puffs of powder smoke marking the locations of the other bushwhackers on this side of the pasture. Six more men were pouring lead down at the line shack. Frank wished he could see into the shack. He wanted to know how many of the Box D men were left alive. He was especially worried about Embry, Hal, and Gage Carlin because he had grown closer to those three men than any of the others during this time in the valley. But he didn't want to see any of them wounded or dying, and when he looked down into the pasture at the sprawled bodies of the men who had fallen in the first volley, anger burned inside him. Brady Morgan and Gaius Baldridge had a lot to answer for, and as far as Brady was concerned, Frank wasn't even going to think of the killer as his son anymore. Brady was just an accident of blood, a vicious murderer who had to be dealt with. The next ambusher knelt in a cluster of small boulders just below the ridge crest with open rocky ground around him. Frank and Salty couldn't approach him without being seen. Like it or not, there was no way to dispose of this man without shooting him down with no warning. Frank stole a little closer, crouched behind a tree, and lifted the Winchester to his shoulder to draw a bead.
Lord have mercy. Come on.
Frank caught the old-timer's arm and kept him from falling, but as he steadied Salty, he saw the red stain spreading on the side of the checkered shirt.
Duck, nab it! I'm hit!
With bullets whipping around them, Frank had no choice but to tackle Salty and knock the old man off his feet even though Salty was wounded. There was a deadfall not far away where a large pine tree had toppled over, possibly after being struck by lightning in a storm. Frank didn't care why the tree had fallen, he just wanted to get behind it.
Wolf, hunt!
Like a streak, Wolf bounded away, which got him out of the immediate line of fire. That was Frank's intention. But at the same time, he had unleashed a dangerous force up here on the ridge. Wolf would assume that anyone he encountered other than Frank or Salty was an enemy, and he would react accordingly. And because of that, some of Brady's gunmen were in for a heap of trouble. Somehow, Frank managed to get Salty behind the fallen tree without either of them getting hit again. Frank lay there while more bullets thudded into the thick trunk that shielded him. When his heart wasn't pounding quite so hard in his chest, he turned to Salty to see just how badly the old-timer was hurt. Salty seemed to have passed out, but his chest was rising and falling rapidly. After pulling up the bloody shirt, Frank saw that a bullet had plowed a shallow furrow across Salty's side. The wound was messy, but not life-threatening, especially if Salty got some medical attention in the reasonably near future. Blood still welled from the crease, so Frank took out his bandana, folded it into a thick pad, and used Salty's belt to bind it into place over the wound. With that done, Frank turned his attention to the problem of who had ventilated the old-timer and tried their best to kill him, too. He supposed the defenders in the line shack could have spotted the two of them, mistaken them for some of Brady's men and opened fire. Frank didn't think that was likely, however. Frank had hoped to get rid of more of the hired killers before his and Salty's presence was discovered. That hope was dashed now. Not only that, he was going to have to carry on alone from here since Salty was wounded too badly to fight.
What in the blazes happened?
One of the varmints winged you. You got a crease in your side. It's bled some, but you'll be all right.
I didn't think I even knew we was over here.
They didn't at first. I figured they must have spotted that fella who died so spectacularly, and that made them look for us.
Where's Wolf? The mangy son didn't get hit, did he?
I sent him hunting.
Good. I hope he chews up a whole passel of them skunks. Just hope he don't catch hydrophobia from them.
I got my bandana tied over the crease to slow down the bleeding. This deadfall is good cover, so I reckon you'll be all right here.
Now wait just a dang minute. You sound like you're planning on leaving me here.
Not much else I can do. You've lost enough blood that you're too weak to keep going.
But dang it! I reckon that's my decision to make, not yours. Son of a gun. Maybe you're right.
Sorry, I know how you hate to miss out on a good scrap.
That's a daggum truth. You're gonna keep trying to rescue those fellas who are holed up down there?
Yeah, I reckon I'm the only chance they've got.
You listen to me, Frank. If you come up against Brady, don't you hesitate. Don't you think about nothing else except gunning the bastard. He's got it coming, Frank. You know he does. And his life ain't worth a thing compared to yours.
You just take it easy, Salty. Don't worry yourself.
You mind what I done told you? Where's my rifle?
You dropped it when you got hit. I had my hands full getting you behind cover. Didn't have a chance to grab your rifle, too.
Oh, well. Still got old hog leg. A couple of dozen rounds for it. Anybody who ain't on our side tries to bother me, I'll blow a hole in them.
I don't doubt it. I'll see you around.
Yeah. If we don't get back together here, we'll meet up in Mexico.
In Mexico. I'll be looking for you.
Frank reared up suddenly and brought the Winchester to his shoulder. He didn't know if he came close to any of the gunmen over there, but he hoped that he made them duck their heads anyway. He surged to his feet and broke into a run. Frank plunged into the trees, moving so fast that he lost his balance and went down into a rolling tumble. Using the rifle to brace himself, he climbed to his feet. There were still gunmen on this ridge. The more of them he could render useless, the better the chance the Box D men would have to escape from this trap with their lives. It was still possible that Guys Baldridge was over here, too, and it might change things if Frank could get his hands on the rancher. Frank started to make his way through the trees, wondering briefly what had happened to Marshal Roy Trask. He had been unable to get a good look at any of the men who had been killed in the ambush. Trask might be lying out there in the pasture dead. Or could the lawmen have been in on the plan with Baldridge and Brady? It didn't seem likely, but Frank couldn't rule out the possibility. Plenty of star packers had turned crooked in the past. Maybe Trask had finally chosen a side and decided that Baldridge was going to come out on top. Frank had seen some things that made him curious about Trask, but he didn't have any answers, even though his gut told him Trask wouldn't have gone along with wholesale murder. Frank turned to look and saw four riders galloping across the far end of the pasture where the slope leading up to it ended. Those had to be some of Brady's men. Brady, or at least somebody over on that opposite ridge, must be sending them over here as reinforcements. They would be hunting him and Salty. He and the old-timer were caught between two forces now. If the killers who had come over from the other ridge found Salty, he wouldn't stand much of a chance against them. Frank had no choice but to turn back. Otherwise, he was condemning Salty to certain death. When Frank reached the edge of the trees, he paused. He could see behind the deadfall from here. Salty had pushed himself up into a half-sitting position and had the old revolver in his hand.
Salty! What are you doing back here? We just had that touching farewell a few minutes ago. See you in Mexico and all that.
More hostiles coming from that direction. I thought I'd come back and help you deal with them.
You ran across that open ground once without getting hit. I ain't sure you're gonna do it again.
Neither am I. That's why I thought I'd get you to cover me.
This smoke pole won't reach that other ridge.
No, but my Winchester will. I'll toss it over to you. You can get it and cover me while I make a run for it.
Salty nodded and shoved his iron back into leather.
Let's fly with it!
Frank threw the Winchester with all his strength. The rifle was heavy and it wasn't meant for throwing, but it made it most of the way to the log, falling short by only a couple of feet. Salty crawled to the end of the deadfall and stretched out his arm as he groped for the Winchester's barrel. Salty latched onto the barrel.
Dad! Blast it! Those ring-tailed Ranahans like to blow my fingers off! Come on anytime you're ready!
Make that rifle sing and dance, Salty!
Frank left his feet in a dive that carried him behind the log next to Salty. The old-timer ducked down again.
Pretty spry for somebody your age.
Yeah, well, I'll feel it in the morning.
Better hope so, anyway. Now what?
Hand me that Winchester. I got more cartridges for it in my pocket.
Frank thumbed more shells through the Winchester's loading gate until the magazine was full again.
We'd better make all our shots count from here on out.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to run out of bullets before we run out of varmints need killing. Speaking of which, you said there was some coming up behind us?
That's right. And we shouldn't have to wait very long for...
As if they had been listening to the conversation and waiting for their cue, four horsemen burst out of the trees charging toward Frank and Salty with guns blazing. Frank hadn't expected them to be able to get their horses up the slope onto the ridge. They must have found another trail. He rolled from his side onto his belly and brought the rifle to his shoulder. Salty pulled his revolver. The other two gunmen yanked their horses around, threw a couple of last shots at Frank and Salty, and galloped back toward the trees.
Daggummit! I was hoping they'd keep coming. That was our best chance of killing them.
We can't stay here, Salty. They'll pick us off if we do.
If we get up and make a run for them, the farmers on the other ridge will get us. It'll be dark in another hour or so. If we could hold out until then.
We can't. We got a minute, maybe less, before those two open fire on us again. Come on.
What are you... Whoa!
Frank grabbed him around the middle with one arm and surged to his feet. Salty wound up draped over Frank's shoulder. Frank broke into a run toward the trees where he had gone a few minutes earlier, only to have to turn back to rescue the old-timer.
They're coming up behind us again!
That 15 yards was the longest of Frank's life. It seemed to take an hour to cross it, but finally he staggered into the trees, dropping to his knees. He lowered Salty to the ground behind one of the pines.
Lord, Frank! I know you're so strong!
Neither did I.
Frank helped Salty to his feet, and together they made their way deeper into the grove.
Feels like I'm bleeding again.
I'd be surprised if you weren't.
They came to a little hollow about half the height of a man and slid down into it. Salty propped his back against the slope while Frank checked the bullet crease. The bandana he had tied on there earlier was soaked with blood. He replaced it with a pad he made from a strip cut off of Salty's shirt.
Sure wish we had a jug of whiskey right now.
Yeah, it would help to clean that wound.
I was thinking more drinking it.
This is a good spot. You got cover all around. I'm gonna leave the Winchester with you and see if I can get a few more of them.
You're liable to need that rifle.
No, I got a hunch it'll be close work from here on out. But it might come in handy for you if those varmints try to sneak up on you.
If they do, I'll give them a hot lead welcome. That's for dang sure.
I never doubted it. So long.
Vi con Dios.
Frank moved through the trees. He made his way to a point of rock where he could see down into the pasture, but was shielded by a pair of boulders. Shots coming from the line shack still peppered the ridges, so he knew at least some of the defenders were still alive. One of the gunmen was off to his right, firing down at the shack. Frank started in that direction and came up behind the man who hadn't noticed him.
Hey!
The hired killer whirled, but Frank's Colt was already out. Frank strode over to him and picked up the fallen rifle. He glanced at the sky as he moved along the ridge. The sun had dipped close to the western horizon. Another half hour and the shadows would be thick, too thick for accurate shooting. If the defenders could hold on for that long, they might be able to slip out under the cover of darkness. Frank looked over his shoulder. Salty was swapping lead with those two gunmen. Frank said a brief silent prayer for the old-timer and continued working his way toward the cliff, which not only backed up to the cabin, but cut off both ridges at the far end. The sight of a pair of legs and booted feet sticking out from behind a rock made him freeze momentarily, but then he realized those limbs were motionless. When they didn't move for a good 2 minutes as he watched, he approached cautiously, his gun held ready, and looked behind the rock. One of the bushwhackers lay there with his head in a pool of blood that was soaking slowly into the ground. The blood came from his throat, which had been torn open by savage fangs. Wolf had been here. Frank resumed his own deadly hunt. He came to a pair of gunmen crouched behind some rocks as they sniped at the line shack. So far, he hadn't seen any sign of Brady or Guy's Baldridge, so it was looking like they were probably on the other ridge. They would have to be dealt with eventually, but right now, Frank was doing all he could on this ridge. He crept up to within 15 feet of the two bushwhackers.
Hold it! Drop those rifles!
Neither man followed that order. Frank really didn't expect them to. Instead, they wheeled around. Breaking into a run, Frank came up to the battle just in time to see Wolf break the wrist of the man's gun hand with a crunch of powerful jaws. In a flash, Wolf knocked the man down and ripped his throat out.
Wolf!
The big cur turned and loped happily back to him, blood dripping from his muzzle. That was the last of the bushwhackers on this ridge, Frank realized. Against seemingly overwhelming odds, he and Salty and Wolf had succeeded in opening one side of the trap. There were still the two men behind them, but from the sound of the sporadic shots coming from back there, Salty was keeping them pinned down. As soon as it was dark, he could make his way down the slope to the line shack and let the men inside know that there was a way out over this ridge. The sun was down now, and gloom had started to descend on the rugged landscape. It wouldn't be long until the darkness was thick enough for Frank to make his move. A sound drew Frank's attention to the far end of the pasture. A large wagon being drawn by 6 horses was headed toward the line shack. The back of it was piled high with hay. Several men rode behind the driverless wagon. Frank knew instantly what the purpose of this maneuver was. Brady's men were going to drive the wagon up close to the line shack and set the hay on fire. The light from the blaze would reveal anyone who tried to escape from the building. The bushwhackers would be waiting to gun them down if they made the attempt. That ruined his plan before they ever got underway. He couldn't reach the line shack now, and the men holed up in there couldn't get out. The only thing he could do now was try to get up the cliff, which was only about 40 feet high at the edge of the ridge, cross over the other ridge, and pick off as many of the hired killers as he could, just like he had done on this side. Unless... The idea that sprang into his brain held some promise, but he didn't know if it was possible. That depended on something that was largely out of his control and would require a great deal of luck. But he couldn't rule it out just yet. As the dusk thickened around him, he holstered his gun and started back along the ridge. Since he knew there were no bushwhackers between him and the hollow where Salty was dug in, no live ones anyway, he didn't have to be as careful and could move faster.
Salty!
Frank? Is that you?
Me and Wolf.
Both of them slipped down in the hollow.
Are you all right?
Yeah. They ain't hit me again. I'm thirsty as hell, though. Probably because of that blood I lost. I'm so thirsty I'd even settle for a drink of water instead of whiskey.
Maybe it won't be too much longer.
Yeah, because I figure those two buzzards will try to sneak up on me once it's good and dark. They'll have a surprise waiting for them when they realize you're here, too.
I won't be. I've got something else to do. But I'll leave Wolf with you. He's worth any two fighting men.
I can't argue with that. What do you got in mind?
Before it started getting dark, did you see where that extra horse went?
The one where you shot that hombre riding it out of the saddle? The last I seen of that horse, it had wandered off yonder to the left and was grazing. Don't know where it is now.
Thanks, Salty. That gives me a place to start looking for it anyway.
What you want to do with that horse? You gonna cut and run and leave me up here, Frank?
You know better than that. If you weren't wounded, I'd kick you in the butt for even asking such a thing. I'm hoping I can find what I need to get those men out of that line shack.
Unless that nag can sprout wings and fly down there, I don't see how it's gonna help.
Well, I reckon you know what you're doing. You always do.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. Wolf, stay here with Salty. If those varmints charge him, you know what to do.
Frank patted Wolf on the head, squeezed Salty's shoulder, and moved off into the twilight, which was not far from being full-fledged night now. The sky was fading from dark blue to black overhead, and some of the millions of stars had already popped into view. An orange glow climbed into the sky above the pasture. Frank knew Baldridge's men had fired the hay in the wagon. It would burn fairly quickly, but they might have more wagons ready to move in if they needed to. Frank heard something moving in the brush not far away. He drew his gun in case it was some of the hired killers, but a moment later he spotted a dark shape larger than a man.
Hey, take it easy. I'm a friend.
The words didn't mean anything, but the tone of voice did. As he came closer, he could see that it was a riderless horse, the mount that had belonged to the man he'd killed earlier. The horse acted a little spooked, but it stayed put until Frank was close enough to catch hold of the reins. Frank patted the animal's shoulder and then ran his hand over the saddle. His fingers tightened on the coiled rope he found hanging there from a strap. That was what he needed. Luck was with him, at least this far, but there was still a long way to go. He took the rope loose from the saddle and draped the coil over his left shoulder.
You can go back to grazing, old boss. And I hope your next owner is an improvement on the last one.
With the rope on his shoulder, Frank practically ran back to the cliff at the edge of the ridge. He had to move carefully since now it was getting too dark to see very well, but he hurried as much as he could. The haystack was still burning down below in the pasture he saw. Baldridge's men, or Brady's men, or whatever they ought to be called, had turned the vehicle so that its back was toward the line shack. That had allowed them to use the wagon itself for cover as they cut the team loose and led the horses away. The glare from the burning hay lit up the front of the shack almost as bright as day, and it spilled out to the sides, too. But it didn't reach the very back of the building, Frank noted, and right now, that was all he cared about. Working mostly by feel, he began to climb the cliff. He had gotten a good look at it earlier, before the sun went down, and he had seen that its face was pitted and scored, offering quite a few footholds and handholds. He pulled himself up carefully, testing each grip before he trusted his weight to it. If he fell, it could prove fatal, not only to him, but also to all the men in the line shack who were still alive. The climb seemed to take forever, but really it was only 10 minutes or so. When Frank reached the top, he pulled himself over the edge and sprawled out for a moment to catch his breath. Then he rolled over, came to his feet, and started along the cliff. He suspected that the view from up here would be spectacular during the day, offering a panoramic vista of the entire valley. Right now, though, all he could really see was the pasture below, lit up by the light from the burning hay wagon. That allowed him to find the spot he wanted, directly behind the line shack. He tied one end of the rope around the sturdy trunk of a pine and dropped the rest of it over the brink. The rope fell in the Stygian darkness between the line shack and the cliff. Frank couldn't tell whether it reached the ground or not, but it was as long as it was and would have to do. He leaned against it, testing the strength of the tree and the knots he had tied. Satisfied with both, he let himself over the edge and started walking down the cliff. The climb down seemed even longer than the one up. If it had been daylight, he would have been an easy target for the hired killers on the ridge. The glow from the blaze didn't reach quite far enough to reveal him, or at least so he hoped. It helped that none of the bushwhackers would be expecting someone to climb down the cliff like this. His arms and shoulders ached and throbbed by the time he reached the end of the rope. Frank knew he was almost to the ground, so he let go and dropped the rest of the way. Frank went to the rear wall of the shack and drew his gun.
Who the hell's out there?
It's Frank Morgan, Embry. I've come to get you out of there.
Morgan, how the hell?
There's no time for that.
Frank drew his knife and started working at the mud to enlarge the chink.
We need to get some of these logs out.
The men inside the shack went to work on the same task. He didn't know yet how many survivors there were, but they labored industriously to remove the earth and mortar that held the logs together.
Some of you keep shooting now and then. That way they're less likely to think that something else is going on.
I'll push on it from inside while you pull, Morgan. Ready?
Ready.
The log came free and dropped to the ground outside the shack. By then, some of the other men had loosened another section of log, and with Frank pulling outside and the men inside pushing, it came out as well. That weakened the wall even more. Minutes later, they had another log out and an opening big enough for men to crawl through.
How many men in there who aren't wounded?
About a dozen. We got six or seven more who got plugged when the treacherous sons of bitches opened fire on us, and we lost half a dozen or so in the pasture.
I saw them out there. I'm sorry. But I need the men who are able to fight.
You heard the man. Yell on out there and do what Morgan tells you. He's in charge.
Paul, I'm not leaving you here.
That bullet busted my ankle. Whatever Morgan's got in mind, I ain't gonna be spry enough for it. You go, Hal. Settle the score for the Box D.
Hal didn't argue with his father. He crawled through the opening they had made in the wall and was followed by 11 other men, among them Gage Carlin. Frank was glad to see that the middle-aged cowboy was all right. The feeling was likewise because Carlin gripped Frank's hand and wrung it.
I didn't expect to ever see you again, Frank. Not this side of the hereafter anyway. Where Salty and Bill?
Salty's up on the eastern ridge holding down the fort there. Kitson's not here.
Damn! You mean he's dead?
No, but he's not in this fight.
Frank showed them the rope dangling from the cliff top.
Climbing that cliff won't be easy, but you can do it. When you get to the top, wait for me. We're gonna make our way over to the western ridge and give Baldridge and his men a surprise.
The Box D punctures seemed to like the sound of that.
I'll go first.
He got his feet braced against the cliff and started climbing. While they were doing that, Frank ducked down and crawled through the opening into the line shack.
Embry?
Here!
Who else is in here?
Embry named five of the hands from the Box D.
And the Marshal.
Trask?
Yeah. I'm here, Morgan.
How bad are you hit?
Bad enough. But it doesn't really matter. I didn't have much time left anyway.
Consumption?
How'd you know?
I saw the way you were coughing back in town a couple of times, and I spotted some blood on your handkerchief. It was pretty easy to figure out from that.
Yeah. You wanted to know where I was right after the inquest when the fight broke out. I was in my office, coughing up what looked like half my lungs. That's where I was. But I didn't want anybody to know about it. I never wanted anybody's damned pity.
You should have spoke up, Marshal. Maybe somebody could have helped you.
There was no help for me. And now with a bullet through me, there sure as hell isn't. But the rest of you get out of here and settle things with Baldridge and that blasted Brady Morgan.
How did you know it was a trap?
Brady tried to spring it too quick. That boy's kill crazy. He opened the ball before his men expected him to, I guess. Anyway, we were able to hotfoot it over here to this line shack while we was trading shots with that marmot up on the ridges. I never trusted him or Baldridge, neither one.
And you were right not to. I didn't want to think Baldridge would sink to that level, but I reckon he did.
It was a woman. I hate to say it, Morgan. I know she's the mother of your son. But both of them are no good.
You're not telling me anything I don't already know, Marshal. And I'll deal with Brady if I get the chance.
What can we do to help?
Those of you who are able to pull triggers, keep shooting. Make them think nothing has changed down here. We'll be working our way around behind them. Give us about 20 minutes to get in position, and then burn powder for all you're worth, so they all start shooting back. We'll need their muzzle flashes to locate all of them.
It's gonna be a hell of a scrap. Wish I could be in the big middle of it with you, but we'll keep them busy until then, Morgan. Don't worry about that.
I never had any doubts, Embry.
Everybody's up that rope with you and me, Frank.
I'm coming.
Frank crawled back out and joined the cowboy at the base of the cliff.
Who's going first?
Go ahead, I can use a few more minutes to rest.
I'm getting too old for dust-ups like this.
I keep saying the same thing, but somehow folks just keep shooting at me.
Frank held the end of the rope as Gage Carlin climbed up. When Carlin reached the top, he tugged the rope three times to signal Frank. Frank gripped the rope and started the ascent. He quickly made it to the top.
In a few minutes, the man in the shack will be stepping up the pace. Move as quiet as you can and spread out along the ridge. When the shooting picks up, you ought to be able to see the muzzle flashes from the bushwhackers. Hit them hard then. We'll be taking them by surprise, and the odds are pretty even.
We'll get them, Mr. Morgan. We'll settle the score for the box D.
Let's go then. Somebody bring that rope. We'll need to get down to the western ridge. That'll be a lot easier than climbing that cliff.
That prediction proved to be accurate. After Frank found a good place to tie the rope around a rock, the men scrambled down without any trouble. They assembled where the cliff met the ridge. Frank had been trying to count off the seconds in his head. He knew the men in the shack would start firing fast and furiously any moment now.
Spread out. Find those bushwhackers.
He spotted the muzzle flash and headed for it as a group scattered. It would have been good if they could have attacked together, but that wasn't the nature of this battle. This skirmish was more a man-to-man fight. Unfortunately, that meant the Box D punchers would be going up against professional killers, but Frank was counting on the element of surprise to make the odds more even. The hay was still burning, but the flames had died down some and their light wasn't as bright. Bright enough, though, to reveal the man who threw open the line shack door and stumbled out into the glare.
You sons of bitches!
Trask.
Frank barely had time to wonder what in the world the marshal was doing before he realized the answer. Baldridge's men all along the ridge opened up on the defiant lawman. But even though he jerked and staggered under the impact of the bullets, he stayed on his feet and kept pulling the trigger of his Colt until it was empty. And every bushwhacker on the ridge had revealed his location by firing again and again, accomplishing exactly what Trask must have hoped he would accomplish by this fatal distraction. Frank charged forward, bounded from rock to rock as he closed in on his quarry. The gunman kneeling behind a boulder must have heard him coming because he tried to turn. Frank raced along the ridge. The muzzle flashes split the darkness. One of them lit up the face of a hired killer right in front of Frank.
Box D, now hold your fire, hold your fire.
Hal, Gage, Box D, gather up, hold your fire.
They had to regroup. If they didn't, they ran the risk of shooting each other. Frank hoped they had done enough damage to Baldridge's forces that they weren't cutting their own throats by halting the attack. As they gathered in the darkness, Frank realized they were all there except for a couple of the men.
We did it! Oh, I think we got them all.
Except for a couple who lit a shuck out of here. I think it was Baldridge and Brady Morgan, but I didn't get a good enough look at them to be sure.
We need some light. Somebody gather up some pine needles and make a fire.
Soon they had several branches burning as makeshift torches. When they spread out again over the ridge, several armed men going with each man who carried a torch, they found that all of Baldridge's hired killers were either dead or badly wounded. But they didn't find Brady Morgan or Gaius Baldridge. It came as no surprise to Frank that the two ringleaders had fled. Frank knelt next to one of the wounded gun wolves and gripped the man's chin, jerking his head around so the gunman had no choice but to look up at him. Blood trailed from a corner of the man's mouth.
Where did Baldridge and Brady go?
Why don't you go to hell?
Frank dug the muzzle of his Colt under the man's jaw.
You'll be there first. There's still three more of you left alive. I'll go ask one of them if you want me to pull this trigger right now.
You're bluffing!
Do I look like I'm bluffing, mister?
The ranch! I saw Brady grab Baldridge. He said they were going back to the B-Star. Said they had to get those girls to make sure They got away safe.
That confirmed Frank's hunch that Faye and Katie were being held at Baldridge's headquarters. He pulled the gun away from the man's throat and let his head fall back.
Come on, we need horses. We're heading for the B-Star. Gage, you and the rest of the men can mop up here and tend to the wounded in the line shack. Salty's up there on that other ridge, too.
Frank was relieved when he saw Wolf come loping up.
Wolf, go to Salty. Somebody needs to go with Wolf and help Salty.
I'll take care of it, Frank. Count on it.
Frank and Hal ran along the ridge until they came to a place where they could descend fairly easily. They reloaded their guns by feel as they hurried toward the line shack to reclaim a couple of the Box D horses milling around nearby.
Can you find your way back to the B-Star in the dark?
They rode out of the pasture where so much killing had taken place.
Yeah. When I was a kid, before there was any trouble between my pa and Baldridge, I roamed all over this valley. I know my way around, even on Baldridge's range.
Brady and Baldridge had a lead on them, so Frank didn't expect to beat the two men back to the ranch. He just hoped they could get there in time to prevent them from taking the two young women and leaving. Hal Embry proved as good as his word. He led Frank straight to Baldridge's headquarters. As they approached the big house, Frank saw lights blazing in most of its windows. Before they got there, he motioned for Hal to stop and reined his own horse to a halt.
We'll go ahead on foot so they don't hear us coming.
How do we know they're still there?
There are a couple of horses standing by the porch. The way their heads are drooping, they've been ridden pretty hard getting here. But the saddles are still on them, and I don't think all those windows would be lit up if the place was abandoned.
I hope you're right. If they've already taken Faye and Katie, we've got to get on their trail as fast as we can.
We will. Let's just check out the house first.
With guns drawn and staying in the shadows as much as possible, they stole toward the house. Frank stepped onto the porch and pressed his back to the wall to the right of the front door, gesturing with his Colt for Hal to take the other side. He edged toward the door. A couple of the windows were open to let fresh air into the house.
Guys, go fetch those girls. Brady, you had them all trapped. How could you let them get away?
We didn't have them all. We didn't have Frank, and somehow he turned it all around. Damn him. Father or no father, if I had him in my sights right now.
You idiot! Frank Morgan's not your father.
What? But all those years, you said...
I told you a fairy tale. A convenient fairy tale about how your father was the big bad gunman who abandoned us and never loved you. And it worked, didn't it? You grew up to be just the man I wanted you to be. A man who would do anything I wanted. Kill anybody I told you to kill. Gaius, all of you, stop right there. Brady and I are going to Great Falls. We'll catch the train to Helena. Once we're there safely, my lawyers will take over.
Take over? I don't understand. After everything that's happened, what can your lawyers say?
Exactly what I tell them to say.
Frank looked into the window. Laura was standing at the top of the stairs on the second floor balcony that ran around the large main room of the ranch house. She had a small pistol clutched in her hand. Brady stood a few yards away on the balcony, also holding a gun. Between them were Gaius Baldridge and the two prisoners he had just herded out of their confinement. Faye Embry and Katie Storm had their hands tied in front of them, and both young women were gagged. Their faces were pale with terror.
I don't understand.
You went mad and tried to wipe out Jubal Embry and his men. When that didn't work, you came back here and tried to kill everyone in the house. You murdered Miss Embry and Miss Storm here. But then Brady saved my life by killing you. And no one will ever be able to prove differently.
That was when Frank kicked the front door open.
Brady!
Brady whirled toward the balcony railing as Frank charged into the room, followed by Hal. Frank started to fire up at him, but he held off as he saw that Brady had been seized by a violent trembling. Brady lowered his gun. He controlled the trembling with a visible effort.
You may not be my father, but you're still fast on the draw. I'm faster, though. Holster it, old man. Let's give a try, just you and me.
Brady, no! Kill him!
How about it? Scared?
Laura jerked around. Frank felt the bullet spear into his shoulder. He took a step back. Brady's gun flashed up and spouted flame. Frank fired at the same instant. He felt the wind rip of Brady's bullet past his ear and saw Brady rock back as Frank's slug plowed through his body at an upward angle. Frank swung his Colt toward her, but Laura had already swept her gun hand toward the prisoners and Baldridge. The rancher thrust Faye and Katie behind him and charged Laura. Bullets thudded into his chest, but the pistol wasn't a heavy enough caliber to slow his momentum. He crashed into Laura. Both of them tumbled down the stairs, wildly out of control. They didn't stop until they reached the bottom. By the time they did, Frank was there, ready to kick the gun out of Laura's hand. There was no need. When she and Baldridge came to a stop, she lay on the bottom with her head twisted at a grotesque angle on her neck. The life was already fading from her eyes. Frank reached down, grasped Baldridge's shoulder, and rolled the man onto his back. While Frank was doing that, Hal rushed past him and charged up the stairs to see Faye and Katie. Laura's bullets might not have stopped Baldridge, but they had penetrated far enough to be fatal.
Morgan, I'm sorry. She deceived me.
You're not the only one.
Frank dragged Baldridge's body aside to make more room as Hal brought Faye and Katie downstairs. Katie looked at Frank.
Mr. Morgan, you're hurt.
Frank glanced down at the blood on his shirt that had leaked from the wound in his shoulder.
I'll be all right. Lord knows this isn't the first time I've been ventilated like this.
You saved our lives. Those lunatics would have killed us.
Frank looked at Brady and Laura. Brady had been loco, all right, no doubt about that. His mother had made him that way. Laura, on the other hand, Frank had learned long ago that some people were just pure evil. But sometimes, the reminders were still mighty damned painful. The rocking chair squeaked a little as Salty rocked back and forth on the front porch of the Box D ranch house. Frank sat beside him in another rocker. Both men had bandages bulked under their shirts where they had been wounded. Several days had passed since the kidnapping of the two young women and the epic battles that followed, and while Frank and Salty were healing well, according to Dr. Hutchison, it would still be a while before they were able to travel for any great distance. That was fine with Frank. He was enjoying the tranquility of life on the Box D now that peace had returned to the valley. With a thumping of crutches, Jubal Embry stumped onto the porch. The leg with the broken ankle held up so that no weight was on it.
You're supposed to be inside resting with that leg propped up.
The hell with that. I ain't the sort to lay around doing nothing. I'm used to being outside. There's work to be done.
I think between them, Hal and Gage have everything under control.
Gage, maybe. Hal's head is too full of sparking that cake gal to think about work. She's a bad influence on him, mighty bad. Why, with her staying out here, the boy speaks up for himself and talks back to me too much. I'll be glad when that crotchety old uncle of hers is recuperated enough for him to open that cafe again.
Cafe or no cafe, I reckon you best get used to that gal being around, Jubal. I don't think Hal's gonna let her go anywhere, except maybe down the aisle of the church.
Well, I got to admit, I'd rather go back to the church for something like that than while we were there yesterday.
A solemn silence gripped all three men for a moment. A day earlier, they had journeyed into Pine Knob for Marshal Roy Trask's funeral. Trask had died a hero, charging out of the line shack to draw the fire of Baldridge's hired killers before Embry or anyone else could stop him. There had been no services for Baldridge, Laura, or Brady. They had been laid to rest in the local cemetery with no mourners on hand except Frank. He instructed Omar Finnegan to put Brady Morgan on Brady's tombstone. He had no idea what other name to use, and that was as good as any, Frank supposed. Faye had wanted to have Bill Kitson hanged for betraying the Box D, after he'd been horsewhipped, of course. But Jubal Embry had overruled his headstrong daughter for once, telling Kitson instead to light out of the valley and never come back. He would be shot on sight if he ever set foot on Box D range again.
I've got the buggy hitched up. I'm sending a letter to that lawyer in Helena instructing him to find out who Baldridge's heirs are. I think we should buy the B-Star from them.
Buy the B-Star? What in blazes will we do with it? We don't need that much range for our herd.
Well, we'll buy Baldridge's stock, too, of course. Once we do that, we'll have the biggest spread in this part of Montana.
I never had no interest in being the biggest. Just the best.
All right, then. Give the B-Star to me. I'll run it. and I'll make it the best.
A gal running a ranch and making it a better spread than mine? That'll be the day.
You think so, do you? Well, just see about that.
Faye turned and headed for the barn, ready to take the buggy to town.
I need a drink.
Embry went back inside.
Frank, I was thinking maybe we ought to stay around here for a while. Oh, those two going at it. I ain't so sure anymore.
I reckon you're right, Salty. We'd better head for Mexico as soon as we're able. Otherwise, we're liable to find ourselves smack dab in the middle of another range war.
The Last Gunfighter number 23, Montana Gundown, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Keegan, James Konacek, Nick DePinto, Scott McCormick, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Dan Sontag, Yasmin Twazon, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Eric Messner, Johan Detweiler, and Christopher Sheeran. Directed by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Johan Detweiler. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Title theme and original music by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for the series The Loner, as well as Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, and Elmer Kelton's Sons of Texas series. Available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers.
The Samhasts have been driven to the brink of extinction. But from the depths of a primeval source of power, a new threat is rising. The last stand of the Samhasts will bring the land of Haunts to the brink of destruction. And this time, even the Highwayman may not be able to save the world from the darkness of the Ancient. Don't miss the thrilling continuation of the Saga of the First King in R.A. Salvatore's The Ancient. Available now in Graphic Audio. The warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in the Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in Graphic Audio.
Now we can invade the Greenlands.
In the cellars of the wine god lies a key without a lock.
It's a puzzle box. In order to open it, you have to follow a certain sequence of motions.
And how do you know that you are on the right path?
You don't.
Ah, so the box mirrors life, no?
I suppose it does, but that doesn't help tell me how to get it open.
Doug Morrell's office.
Hi, Doug, it's Anya. I'm helping the French police with an investigation in the catacombs.
What? The catacombs? You're running an investigation in the catacombs and you didn't tell me? I'll send a crew over immediately.
There's nothing here of interest to the show. The authorities stumbled on the skeleton of a man in a Civil War uniform and...
Union or Confederate uniform?
Confederate, but that's really beside the point.
This is good, Anya. Real good. We can turn this into a world-class episode. Just leave it to me.
Doug, we're not doing an episode on this. I just need the letter authenticated.
Who's it from?
Jefferson Davis.
Confederate President Jefferson Davis?
The one and the same.
Anya?
Yes, Doug?
Let me be sure I've got this straight. You discovered a skeleton, dressed in the uniform of a Confederate soldier, carrying a letter from President Davis in the midst of the Paris catacombs, and you don't think there's anything of interest there for the show.
There you'll find the lady, left alone and in distress.
The Creed woman apparently survived the fall from the roof. She needs to be eliminated before she speaks to the police. Get back up there and get rid of her before she becomes more of a nuisance.
How did you get that?
I'd be happy to explain everything, but right now I think it's better if we got out of here, don't you? Run!
To find that which you are seeking, use the key to unlock the chest.
It would seem, Miss Creed, that you are better prepared to find the treasure than your colleague. I think it would be much better if you did the dirty work, found the treasure, and then just turned it over to me.
Like hell I will.
Kill one of them. I don't care which one.
Wait! Just wait a moment. I'm sure we can work this out.
Work this out? What is there to work out? You'll either find the treasure for me or I'll shoot your friends. It's pretty simple.
Fine. I'll do it.
See? That wasn't so difficult now, was it? What are you waiting for? I told you to kill one of them.
You son of a bitch!
Anya!
Rogue Angel number 33, Cradle of Solitude.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.